Lady Chatterley's Lover by D.H. Lawrence. Read by Maxine Peake. Chapter 1. Ours is essentially a tragic age, so we refuse to take it tragically. The cataclysm has happened. We are among the ruins. We start to build up new little habitats, to have new little hopes. It is rather hard work. There is now no smooth road into the future, but we go round or scramble over the obstacles. We've got to live, no matter how many skies have fallen. This was more or less Constance Chatterley's position. The war had brought the roof down over her head, and she had realised that one must live and learn. She married Clifford Chatterley in 1917, when he was home for a month on leave. They had a month's honeymoon. Then he went back to Flanders, to be shipped over to England again 6 months later, more or less, in bits. Constance, his wife, was then 23 years old, and he was 29. His hold on life was marvellous. He didn't die, and the bits seemed to grow together again. For 2 years he remained in the doctor's hands. Then he was pronounced a cure, and could return to life again, with the lower half of his body, from the hips down, paralysed forever. This was in 1920. They returned, Clifford and Constance, to his home, Ragby Hall, the family seat. His father had died. Clifford was now a baronet, Sir Clifford, and Constance was Lady Chatterley. They came to start housekeeping and married life in the rather forlorn home of the Chatterleys, on a rather inadequate income. Clifford had a sister, but she had departed. Otherwise, there were no near relatives. The elder brother was dead in the war. Crippled forever, knowing he could never have any children, Clifford came home to the smoky Midlands to keep the Chatterley name alive while he could. He was not really downcast. He could wheel himself about in a wheelchair, and he had a bath chair with a small motor attachment, so he could drive himself slowly around the garden and into the fine, melancholy park, of which he was really so proud, though he pretended to be flippant about it. Having suffered so much, the capacity for suffering had to some extent left him. He remained strange and bright and cheerful, almost, one might say, chirpy, with his ruddy, healthy-looking face and his pale blue, challenging, bright eyes. His shoulders were broad and strong. His hands were very strong. He was expensively dressed, and wore handsome neckties from Bond Street. Yet still in his face, one saw the watchful look, the slight vacancy of a cripple. He had so very nearly lost his life that what remained was wonderfully precious to him. It was obvious in the anxious brightness of his eyes how proud he was, after the great shock, of being alive. But he had been so much hurt that something inside him had perished. Some of his feelings had gone. There was a blank of insentience. Constance, his wife, was a ruddy country-looking girl, with soft brown hair and sturdy body and slow movements, full of unusual energy. She had big, wandering eyes and a soft, mild voice, and seemed just to have come from her native village. It was not so at all. Her father was the once well-known R.A., old Sir Malcolm Reed. Her mother had been one of the cultivated Fabians in the palmy, rather pre-Raphaelite days. Between artists and cultured socialists, Constance and her sister Hilda had had what might be called an aesthetically unconventional upbringing. They had been taken to Paris and Florence and Rome to breathe in art, and they had been taken also in the other direction, to The Hague and Berlin, to great socialist conventions where the speakers spoke in every civilised tongue and no one was abashed. The two girls, therefore, were, from an early age, not the least daunted by either art or ideal politics. It was their natural atmosphere. They were at once cosmopolitan and provincial, with the cosmopolitan provincialism of art that goes with pure social ideals. They had been sent to Dresden at the age of 15 for music.